Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, we got through another week. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're staying good to one another. And hopefully you got to watch some good films that were new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. And we'll find out what you watched via social media in a little bit. That'll be the grab a pencil portion of the show. But I'm really excited because, well, the bad news is Mardi Gras is not happening. The good news is I have an ambassador of Mardi Gras on the line to talk about films that were shot in Louisiana, his music in films, as well as his new solo album. It's called, let's give it a shot, Lâcher Prise. And the voice you hear making sure that I'm okay is Michael Doucet, of course, one of the founding members, the leader of Beau Soleil. So bonjour, Michael.
Bonjour, Matthew. How you doing? Yes, we do. I mean, the Mardi Gras parades are canceled, but darling, Mardi Gras goes on. Don't worry about it.
It's a state of mind as well, right?
Exactly. No, it's going to be since that polar vortex down here, it's going to be a little cold. So that means there's extra gumbo being had.
There you go. What I think it was like about a month ago, I started seeing that the folks were decorating their houses, and I think that's a great substitute under these dire circumstances.
It is really a cool thing. Hope they do that, every year. It's that cool. It's really that, and people are loving it. It's got to go on some kind of way.
So
no problem.
Do you have to open the window shades in order to get beads?
I think they throw it at the house. I don't know exactly how that's going to work. We're going to see how that works. Nobody has quite figured that one out, which way they're going to go.
I believe it's
both ways. Who knows?
I believe it's, show us your shutters or something like that. I don't know.
Show us your shutters. Yeah, close your shutters.
So it goes, I guess I have to start with, Michael, how has the last year been for you?
you mean yesterday? That's the thing about it. It passed so fast. And for us, I mean, you're talking about Lâcher Prise, that was released a year ago and on Valentine's Day. And we had this big tour. We're going to play South by Southwest, we do Preservation Hall, California tour, Northeast tour, et cetera. Like everybody else, everything was canceled. So that part was kind of depressing. As far as affecting us here, I was fine with that. I mean, because I go on the road and I'm staying home and I'm writing and doing everything else. So for me, it was like, this is how I live. That wasn't a big adjustment. A big adjustment was like not seeing friends and not being able to play music together. That was the hardest one.
Mm-hmm. Did you do the online performances in your recording studio type stuff?
I'm not really a fan of that, to say the least. Yeah, if I could, I wanted to throw my computer away after Facebook after a while. Just had enough of that. We do Zoom. We do a Zoom thing every month. In fact, we're doing one tomorrow. It's called OurConcerts.live. And it's a Mardi Gras show, and we do it at our bass player's house. And these people are really – it's the one I really like the best. I mean, Mark O'Connor does a show. Rachel Borden, great classical violinist, does a show. Bruce Molsky does a show. So it's kind of like, my friends and everything. And they send you – believe it or not, that's how it's done. They send you iPhones, and we connect all the iPhones together and do the sound and send that to Greg Pine, who runs this thing in Chicago, and he mixes it. And so it's like we don't have to deal with that. But at the same time, I think the quality is pretty good. So if somebody's listened to this live, then I would suggest listen to it tomorrow because it's our Mardi Gras show.
What time will it be on?
Oh, that would be 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central.
Ah, so it's
Saturday the 13th.
It's up against my Blues Mardi Gras show. That's all right.
Well, okay, Matthew, it was either that or Mardi Gras Day. Now,
fair enough.
Be in good shape to do Mardi Gras, so let's just, they have so many Mardi Gras shows. I think they even have a Sirius channel on Mardi Gras, so it's okay. Let's just celebrate.
That's exactly. Yeah, no matter where you go, so long as you're celebrating one way, shape, or form. Now, do you, where are you currently living now?
It's Lafayette, Louisiana.
You're still in Lafayette?
It's about 35 miles from the Gulf.
And how has the city been handling things?
Well, you know, people get together over here. You got to talk, you know. And so it hasn't been as bad as we think. It's just like it's not as bad as California. And when they had that big rush in New Orleans last year after Mardi Gras, you know, that was a big thing. It never got to be like that. But then, you know, every time you got big events, like they got big families, like Christmas and Thanksgiving, where there was a big bump. Which was like everywhere, but basically that's it. And all the bars, I mean, the bars are closed. And a lot of some places try to do music open air and you know, to mix things because, you know, it's like you can't pay for the band and all that. So it's kind of crazy, but, you know, everybody's just dealing with it. I mean, I think everything's going to change. I mean, you know, I went from, you know, being totally, very nicely employed to unemployed. Or retired. I can't figure out which one I'm at, but I'm not working, that's for sure.
A musician retires? No.
That's what I mean. It just doesn't fit my resume.
That's right. You know, and I know Sunday is your birthday, so happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
And my wife's birthday is on the 12th, so yeah, it's double time. So it's going to be a fun weekend for all, I'm sure.
It's going to be a great year. 21's got to be a better year. I think everybody... Everybody goes with that one. So
exactly.
Goes.
Exactly. So I guess going back to the album, what brought on doing a solo album?
Okay, well, our last record with Beau Soleil and Michael Doucet was on Compass, and Gary West is the head of that, and he always wanted me to do another solo record, but he wanted me to go to Nashville. Compass is out of Nashville. He wanted me to go to Nashville and record it with some, you know, great Nashville studio musicians, which sounded pretty good. But then the songs I was writing, I said, nah, I said, the people over here, you know, they play better. And so I got him to come down here, but it was during crawfish season, so he didn't mind too much. And so I got a group of, you know, people together, Chad Beatard, Chris French, Jim Kolacek, and Sarah Quintana, who had been playing some duets, to get together, and we just recorded it in about 2.5 days, actually, because we knew the song. And it was just fun doing that. I mean, it didn't come out until like 2 years after we did it, but it was just fun doing it. And then we went to Nashville to mix it, and he added, you know, a couple of musicians from there. But that's how that happened.
And how was it working with the Turtle Island Quartet?
Well, that was great touring with them, and I have a song from them that I played, one of the songs I wrote that we recorded together, which I'm really proud of. And it was great playing with them. And it's just kind of a freer album. It had a different point of view, and it's different than Beau Soleil, but it's stuff that I wanted to do. You know, you just got to do what you got to do.
Well, and listening to it, I mean, there's a couple tracks that I could see. I could hear you, Beau Soleil, doing the song, but there was also stuff where you were able to expand. And I guess that's why one does solo albums away from a band from every now and then.
And that's the only reason, exactly, to give it like a different shot, a different kind of perspective from doing that. Because it's not really a Cajun. I mean, okay, I'm Cajun, Acadian origin, but it doesn't mean I have to play Cajun music all the time. And I was writing some different things too, and so I just, you know, just went with friends who could adapt to that. But you're right. I mean, both of them play half the songs anyway, so it's not that far from the apple's not that far from the tree.
It's that thing of all scotches are whiskeys, but not all whiskeys are scotches, or something like that.
Yeah, you stay away from that, man. That's Indiana. That's Indiana and Tennessee. That's a bourbon or a whiskey. You know, it's like, oh, man, that's like the macaws on that one, man. Don't get started on that.
Bourbons and scotches. I hear you. I hear you. That's all right.
That's all right.
So how are the rest of the guys in Beau Soleil doing?
Yeah, everybody's doing good. Everybody's got other jobs. Everybody had other jobs. I mean, the music business, even before the COVID, was not great anyway, I want to say. I mean, that's been down for a while. And like I said, we had tours canceled. We both were supposed to go do a European tour in France and Germany and Alaska and all that. So that's been put off. Like, our next gig is in 22.
Oof.
That's where it starts now. So, you know, everybody had to get something to support them. And luckily we did. And so everybody's doing pretty good. I will definitely give everybody my best for me, but they appreciate that. But everybody's very, very cautious. I mean, there's no, they had a friend of mine that had somebody canceled and he had an outside gig and, he called me to play. I said, well, let me ask the group. So I called the group and like a 4 out of 5 cancel, wouldn't want to do the gig, even though it was outside.
Right.
And I don't blame him. I said, look, that's fine. I said, I'm not here to give you COVID. If you want to do it, everybody's been saying, let's play. So it was, you would have loved it. It was like the power trio. It was the, it was accordion player, Chad Uvall, and me, and Jim Kolacek, who was the drummer for Lachey Priest. So we did the power trio. There's a video of that on YouTube. I ought to send that to you because it's pretty good.
I've emceed 2 blues festivals, both outdoors, and part of it was, I mean, it paid pretty well, and they were doing everything to, as far as to code, and basically I was like, just, I have my money, I have my food and my drink, and I'll just be over here until the other band ends, but as far as mingling and whatnot, and I haven't been to a movie in a year, and I have a film show, so
that's tough, man.
Well, I mean, as when you listen to this podcast, like I know you will, the second half of the show is basically folks on Twitter and Facebook saying what they've been watching, and if a title comes, and there's been times where somebody will mention a title, I went, oh, I have that movie on my pile of movies I've bought and haven't watched yet, so that sparks something, and vice versa. So who knows?
Well, if I can put my 2 cents in,
please.
The best movie of 2020 that I've seen is The Gentlemen, and I think it's a perfect movie. I've watched this movie 11 times. and every time, because it takes place in England, so I even have the captions on there so I can understand what they're saying. And it is a perfect movie. It is hysterical and it is right on. I mean, I can't remember the last time I watched a movie. Usually you watch a movie, oh, that's good, but this one. So I hope it gets some awards. If not, it's definitely one of my favorites.
At the very least, it's got the Doucet Awards, so that's cool.
Whatever that is.
So you watch it with subtitles. Is this getting back at the needing subtitles for a film like Southern Comfort?
Well, Southern Comfort wasn't as bad. I mean, I guess some people love it when they do documentaries and they put the English. Even though we're speaking English. Yeah.
Or how about this, Mike?
No.
No, how about my favorite cinematic Cajun, Armada Sante, Belzizar de Cajun?
Oh, my God. I mean, he tried. I mean, I mean, look, I got my list of movies, too, or something. We'll go through that whenever you're ready. But it can't be as bad as Dennis Quaid, who is a Texan.
Oh, in the Big Easy.
He came up with that, the Big Easy. We never called New Orleans the Big Easy. Ever. Nobody ever heard about that. It takes a Texas who cannot pronounce chat. Who says share. I mean, it's the worst. It's like we cringe when we see that movie. But, and, he's a great guy. He's a great musician. Like I said, he's Texan, but he ain't from Louisiana.
By the way, for the record, folks, Beau Soleil is on the soundtrack to The Big Easy, so...
Oh, well, let's talk about The Big Easy.
Oh, okay, go for it. There. Yeah, yeah.
We're talking about the record by the record. It's a really good song. It's got lots of different, a lot of original songs.
Do it.
And just very soulful things. And that's what I went with, kind of a blues, more of a blues and jazz thing. And I think I'm really proud of it. To me, it's one of the best things I've ever done. And it was just so much fun. And the atmosphere is different. And who would have known that this thing happened,
Mm-hmm.
And I do a song about a Mardi Gras, walking on Mardi Gras Day, that is kind of now, it's kind of, well, when was that? anyway, I really like the record. So
cool.
And it's on Compass Records. There you go. The Big Easy. Well, okay. That's a long story. The director.
Go.
The director of that, of course, was Jim McBride. And the original script was supposed to be set in Chicago. But he loved the music of Louisiana, so he moved it to Louisiana. And that's when, you know, Dennis Quaid came on and changed, you know, had the name, the Big Easy. We call it the Big Easy. Maybe they do that, the Texans do it, but we don't do it. But anyway, that's another thing. And he was the worst accent ever. But that's the Big Easy. And yeah, so, and that's politics, Matthew.
Yes.
See, Jim called me up. He wanted me to be in the movie, but politics superseded. So I'm not in the movie. So he said, okay, they don't want you, you know, somebody else wants to, you know, they pulled some weight on it and said, well, if you don't let us play this song, then I'm going to, you know, do that kind of stuff. Anyway, I'm not going to say who it was or anything like
Fine.
That. But he said, we'll just put your song as the title song. So I said, Jim, that's fair.
Okay.
So that's all good. Now we're talking about that. And other, you know, they have some nice things in New Orleans. I mean, of Bayou St. John, there are some nice shots. And every now and then, anyway, let's talk about something else.
Okay, all right. Well, let me ask you, say worst accent, worse than anybody involved in The Waterboy?
Oh, my God. You know, I have to admit, I've never seen that.
You're scared.
Now, people here kind of, they like it, you know, so
yeah.
You never can tell. There's some people here that really did not like, you know, Simon's, Tremé. Yeah, you know, they said all about that. Yeah, so it said every day is Mardi Gras. And I said no, it's not. But I mean, it turned into that. So you got everybody feels anything.
Well,
so I can't.
You're right. I think the thing with Sandler, because he did Cajun Man on Saturday Night Live, which I was not a fan of, and the fact that he was going to do an entire film. Now, on one hand, you also have Kathy Bates playing his mother, who is an Academy Award winning actress and is able to actually wrap an accent around her because she's trained that way. You know, there's that helps, but you also have, you know, Coach Jerry Reed and Sandler. So I understand your hesitation, I guess.
Yeah, so I do want to see it.
Okay.
I mean, I just never had a chance to see it. So, I have nothing against it either way.
Well, here's speaking of accents, I talked about this earlier this year. I received a box set from Time Life Home Video. It's basically the ultimate collection of Dolly Parton.
Oh, wow.
And Dolly Parton, of course, was in Steel Magnolias. Dolly Parton, this is the one film, because, of course, that is supposed to be set in Louisiana. Dolly Parton's the only one, she's from the South, but she's the only one not attempting to do a Louisiana accent because she's Dolly Parton. It's like Sean Connery in The Hunt for Red October, or Highlander, or The Wind and the Lion. We're like, we love her. She sounds like she's from Pigeon Forge as opposed to Louisiana, but because she's a global treasure, we kind of give her a pass.
Yeah.
Is that reflected down in your neck of the woods?
Well, it's funny because Dolly Parton, actually, one of her earliest recordings, she recorded in Crowley, Louisiana.
Okay.
She knows the music, and she probably has respect for the music, enough respect as not to do it. Because that kind of twang and Cajun, man, that's oil and water right there. So she probably did us a favor, and her too. So I really respect her for doing that. Unlike Southern Comfort. Knows people. I mean, Keith Carradine should have got shot first. The best actor in that movie was Peter Coyote. He got shot in the first 10 minutes. And Powers Booth. I mean, that's, you know, we're going to do that. So I mean, and people. I mean, it's an easy. Well, we'll talk about that too. It's not an easy language to master.
Right.
David Strathairn did that in Eve's Bayou. I think he.
Passion Fish.
Passion Fish. That's right.
I love Passion Fish.
And he does a really good job. I mean, it's hard to do because it's not one accent.
Right.
And not everybody speaks like Justin Wilson.
You know
what I mean?
Yeah, well, and I think with the South is, you know, I tell students all the time, the South is not one general accent. Just like, you know, there's multiple voices in England. There's multiple voices in Louisiana alone. Every Southern state has its own. I mean, if they watch the beginning of My Fair Lady, Professor Higgins can, you know, nail your accent down to the street that you live on.
That's pretty mad, and you're right about that. And of course, Louisiana is actually south of the South, because you have people in New Orleans like I mean, who speak with a, you know, it's like Brooklyn accent. I mean, because of the Irish Channel. I mean, you have, and then you got your yeah. You know, where you at? You know, kind of doctor. So you have all this stuff. And you have people here, I mean, who anyway, I'm not even going to try to imitate that.
That's all right.
But it's it's not the way it is. That's the way it is. What can you say? But anyway. But, so you want to go down the movie thing?
Well, actually, I have a couple notes. I was going through your bio, and I know you were born in Scott, Louisiana. Is that right?
Yeah, it's like 5 miles from Lafayette.
Right. So I looked and see. I went to see, now I'm shamelessly plugging, LafayetteTravel.com to find out what films, do you know what films were made in your beloved birth town?
In Scott?
Yes.
I don't remember. I don't know any.
Okay, well, I will tell you this. There are a number of Christmas films that look very Hallmarky.
We don't even count those.
All right. According to Lafayette.com, Secretariat.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see that either.
With Diane Lane, yep. In the Electric Mist.
Yeah, but now, hold on. That was Tavernier, right? And they had two films. They had one that was American and one that was French, and they couldn't get along.
Ah.
We did the soundtrack to the French film, and the English film was horrible. I mean, I love, you know, Joan and
Goodman.
It just didn't make it.
Right.
And but that's too bad, because I mean, that's a James Lee Burke movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was required. In fact, years before that, they did. Alex Baldwin really wanted to do Heaven's Prisoners, and they did that in Louisiana. That's one of James Lee, and it's better. Even he had a better accent, but it was like a New Orleans accent because he played this Cajun who was in New Orleans for a while, so he could get away with
adapted. Yeah, adapted to his environment, kind of. And then finally, the remake of All the King's Men.
That was outside of that. Yeah, some of it was Lafayette. A lot of it was around Plaquemines.
Okay.
I didn't really watch that one. I mean, I saw it, and because I liked the original with Broderick Crawford.
Broderick Crawford,
so
yes.
Better, you know, and that was good. But, you know, they also did Hurry. It was called Casey's Shadow with Walter Matthau.
Yep.
They did that in Crowley. And actually, that's a music one because I actually played in that movie. But in those days, the early 70s, nobody gets credit.
Right.
And I played with a great old-time Cajun fiddle player by the name of Hector Duyon and his accordion player, Oktay Clark, who actually hadn't even recorded before that. So that was a pretty cool thing. And what they did show in Cajun and Casey's Shadow was that the old racetrack. See, here we have quarter horses, so we have our racetracks are straight quarter mile racetrack, and it used to be prevalent all over the place because everybody had horses, and now you can hardly even find that. So that's a good movie for that one, Casey's Shadow.
Cool. And it's been a long time since I've seen that, and I wondered, yeah, especially with Walter Matthau, I'm like, really? Okay, we'll have to give that a shot.
He could pass for Cajun because you can't understand him anyway.
So I have a list here in front of me. What films stick out for you as far as films shot in Louisiana? Good, bad, ugly, what, you know, all the above.
Okay, well, let's start with the original ones. The original Tarzan was shot in Morgan City.
1918, yep.
Well, it came out in 1918, but they shot it in 1916. It was supposed to be 1917. But Tarzan was played by Leo Lincoln. And in that era, in the 1960s, 1970s, there were no we had bridges, not for cars. The only bridges across the Mississippi River were for trains. So that's how they got the animals down there. And so they have lions and they have apes. And there's a funny story about that. In the original movie, I don't know if you've seen it, he actually does kill a lion. It's not PC. You couldn't do that now. But the other thing about it is that the apes got away. So people say they had pets with these apes, you know, along the way. I mean, it's hysterical. You know, that's the original Bigfoot. But the unique thing about that movie, it was a silent movie, was that the director, there were so many vines, he said, oh, Tarzan, Leo, why don't you just swing on this vine? That is the image of Tarzan. And not one place in the Burroughs book did he mention Tarzan swinging on a vine. Only because they filmed that movie in Louisiana is Tarzan on a vine. How about that?
Wow, look at that, folks. These are your pledge dollars at work. I did not know that.
Yeah, and we'll go back, you know, the same era. It was a great movie called Evangeline, and that was in 1929, a little bit later. And then they filmed that, like, I mean, You feel that in Minnesota, California, and Louisiana. Now, what's amazing about that, it was a silent film, but to me, it was about Vangeline, that's Longfellow's version of that. And it's the first time that that whole story about these two lovers who were going to get married, then they're separated by the English, who separated all these families, the Acadian families in Nova Scotia, and put them on boats and sent them to the 13 colonies, and some actually got to Louisiana. But 12,000 Acadians were deported. 1,200 actually made it to Louisiana. But in that movie, it adheres to the story in a way. And there's one scene where the fiddle player is called Michael. I don't know if anybody read that. But in the movie, he drops his violin as he's boarding the boat, and his English soldier steps and crushes the violin.
Oof.
So it's worth that. Another unique thing about it, I have a picture of my great aunt, Louise O'Connor. Her original name was LeBlanc, with Dolores Del Rio.
Ooh.
She was an extra in the movie. And years after that, we did a play, and there were two other people who were still alive. Or she's passed away by now. But anyway, that's that. Okay?
It's cool.
Okay. Now, another movie that moves a little bit down in Baton Rouge, it's called Hurry Sundown. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah. This is for fans, if you want it, the first time you hear Michael Caine do a Southern accent, it is it's a Otto Preminger, right. Southern fried melodrama. And it's very, very 60s. And there's a lot of story going on, and there's a lot of Faye Dunaway, Burgess Meredith. I mean, I would have a few cocktails and some before enjoying that picture.
Jane Fonda playing saxophone.
That's,
I remember that one.
Yeah, there's sometimes the saxophone is just a saxophone.
Yeah. And Diane Carroll.
Yes.
That was the big deal about Diane Carroll, because there was a big deal about pressure. They stayed in one hotel, and the people in the hotel says, oh, this person's black, she can't go swimming. And Preminger said, well, go swimming or we leave in town. So it was in 1967, still that kind of racist thing happened. But you mentioned Faye Dunaway. That was her first movie, that?
Yep. And
all right. So, and I love that. And that's set in below Baton Rouge. And what you see in that one, you see beautiful, the levees. You see the fields, and the skies are just great. I mean, we don't have mountains in Louisiana. We have clouds. it has a great feel, like you said, and I agree with you totally. I mean, it wasn't a great movie, but at that time, it was like pretty cool to see that.
Oh, sure. And also, at that time, you can CG clouds. One of my favorite CG moments of all time was Ang Lee needed more clouds in Sense and Sensibility. Back then, you can imagine Otto Preminger with his monocle waiting for the sky to look the right way, and then you film it. I mean, it's expensive, but that's what you did back then.
And it was sunny days, and it looked like they filmed it in August. So, I mean, I mean it must have been a hell of a movie.
Yep.
But there's another movie. And did you ever see this movie? It's called My Name is Nobody.
The Terrence Hill Spaghetti Western. Yeah, with Henry Fonda, I believe.
Exactly. Renegade. He was shooting people. But the most important part of that movie, 1973, that's when they tore up Decatur Street in New Orleans, where the old French Market was.
Mm.
And the old, they had Café du Monde was always there, but then, Morning Call was the original coffee. And that was in the middle. And they tore all these streets up and they put dirt and stuff like that. That movie shows that part of New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
Torn up. Because they did it as it's a Western, right?
Yep.
And so the streets were all dirt, so they weren't brick. And you get to see what New Orleans. It's a short clip, and I only saw it back then, but I'll never forget it because you had to wait through the traffic to get to the thing. But it's a beautiful movie as far as that little part of New Orleans.
Well, speaking of 70s, I'm going to throw a couple titles at you because these were ones that I revisited recently. But one of the things that's great about the city of New Orleans, it's the European city in the United States, and there are sections of that town that look like they have not changed in decades. And so, for example, Walter Hill's Hard Times, bare-knuckle brawling film with Charles Bronson and James Coburn, which is set, I believe, set during the Depression. But, somebody's coming for me. There was enough city footage you know, certain parts of town as well as certain sections of the country that, you know, they didn't have to do a whole lot of movie magic in order to capture the period, I guess.
That's the way that was in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
Was it?
And then...
You know who else is in that movie? Dennis McGee and Sadie Corbett.
Oh, wow. Right.
Dennis McGee is the old fiddle player. Maybe he was my mentor. He recorded 1929 with his brother-in-law. They're in that movie, believe it or not.
Excellent. See, I'm one of those that when I hear music that I think I could play on the show in a movie or a TV show, I'm waiting for the credits to go, who was on that or who played that? In fact, go ahead.
They didn't give credits. I don't know. They never gave credit for musicians and played in these movies. I think it changed in the 80s or something, or late 70s.
Well, there's
all these movies.
There's one that the next one I want to talk about, and I did not know she was in this until I watched it a second time. But this was a great example of capturing New Orleans in the 70s, the blaxploitation thriller J.D.'s Revenge.
I missed that one.
It's Glenn Turman, who had just done Cooley High. He plays, I can't remember if they actually named Tulane, but he's a law student who is possessed by the spirit of a wronged gangster who is accused of murdering a woman. And so you have the 70s aspect of New Orleans at that time. There's footage of Bourbon Street at that time, the Stockyards. Yeah, Lou Gossett Jr. is in it. He's great. He's him and Turman are. It's not as ridiculous a horror film as say Blackula, and I love Blackula, or Blackenstein, or Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde. These are actual titles, friends. But the fact that the Turman and Gossett performances are really good. But there is a scene where, it's a gangster named J.D. from the 1940s. So you see Turman dressed in 40s garb. He goes to a bar, and a bartender, an older bartender lady, has a couple lines with him. And then I realize in the credits, it's Blue Lou Barker.
Oh, come on. What's the name of this movie?
J.D.'s Revenge.
J.D., maybe vaguely, okay.
I think 1976, I believe, so.
1976.
But yeah, I was like, who is that? And then, because there was a couple songs that they used, I'm like, well, it's, you know, kind of 70s soul. And then going through the credits, I'm like, Blue Lou Barker. So, yeah, look for that.
You talk about music. I mean, come on, has to be my favorite music, you know, except for, like, documentaries. I mean, there's
sure.
So many great doc. I always, like, Always for Pleasure by Les Blank, and did like a New
yep.
Orleans thing. But as far as movies, King Creole. Kind of,
yes, me, that's on mine.
Elvis' best movie.
The best movie he ever did.
Yes, and I wish they would have kept like that. There were some great shots of Bourbon Street and just the quarter, because they talk about, you know, Streetcar Named Desire. And when I saw that as a movie, there was not that many outside shots in New Orleans.
No.
Most of it had to be shot someplace else. So as far as the shot, it was shot there. So I think they captured the atmosphere, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and that's Michael Curtiz, of course, who directed Casablanca, among other things. And coming off the bench, you have Carolyn Jones, Walter Matthau, Vic Morrow. It's a legit and one of the best looking representations of the city of New Orleans in black and white. The other one for me, and you mentioned Elia Kazan, it's going back to the current climate we live in. And by the way, you're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. I'm chatting about Louisiana cinema with Michael Doucet. I have yet to watch revisit the Steven Soderbergh film Contagion, which is about, of course, a virus and that epidemic. But on my pile of Blu-rays that I had purchased but did not have gotten around to, and I knew we were going to have this conversation, I did revisit 1950 Elia Kazan's Panic in the Streets.
Boy, I don't know about that.
It's Richard Widmark right after Kiss of Death, a young Jack Palance, a young Zero Mostel, and it's about a great black and white cinematography and showing how big of a melting pot the city is. But it is about an illegal immigrant who is killed and has a virus, and Widmark plays the officer of U.S. public health who's trying to shut down the city to snuff the virus before it expands. And I was like, this, I'm glad I watched this a year after things went haywire, as opposed to, at least now back then. But yeah, this is an early Elia Kazan film.
Well, he did a lot in the South, you know. I mean, I was watching, I mean, which is Warren, Earl Warren, not Earl Warren, but there was a Warren who wrote a book, a novel called Band of Angels. Do you remember that with Clark Gable? They tried to do like a remake sort of, you know, GWTW.
Oh, vaguely, yeah.
Vaguely, and that's when DiCarlo played a mulatta. Mm. And she's discovered, so she's sold as a slave, and anyway, she, you know, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, the fact is, it's right at the Civil War when they come in and they have to burn the fields. That's a beautiful one. And the building, the plantation that they use is Saint Helene, which now has, like, oil refineries all around it. So it's kind of that's a nice shot of that. It's an okay move. It's let me put it this way. It has a happy ending, believe it or not.
So does it feel tacked on at the very last 5 minutes?
Well, you know, Sidney Poitier is in there, too.
And okay.
It's got some, you know, they have good shots in New Orleans, but it's a poor man's Gone with the Wind.
Okay.
You know? But another movie, but this is a documentary. You are familiar with Louisiana Story? By Robert Flattery?
I've heard of it, yes.
Okay, this was shot in southwest Louisiana, and Robert Flattery, he did Nanook of the North or something like that. And basically he went to Avery Island where they make Tabasco, and he shot around there. And it's a pastoral view. It's black and white, of course. It's 1949. And they had local actors. And basically it's how the oil company came into the bayous, and the bayous were just a pastoral place, and the guy, Boudreaux, was just, you know, has a pet raccoon and, you know, chasing, you know, fishing. And the thing about it, I mean, he did it for Esson, paid him to do it. And I don't think they got what they wanted, because it wasn't too positive on the oil side what they did to this land in Louisiana. But the good thing about this movie, the soundtrack was done by Virgil Thompson,
mm-hmm.
who's the only person to win a
Pulitzer
Prize for the soundtrack of that movie. And he took a lot of Louisiana folk songs, and via this person by the name of Irene Whitfield, who I met back in the 70s, used to teach with my aunt, and she wrote this book called Louisiana Folk Songs. It was actually a 1939 LSU thesis that became this song. It was the first book that actually put Louisiana folk songs. And that's where he got to classicalize, if you will, the Louisiana folk songs, which I think is about the highest our music will ever get, you know, as far as that.
Excellent. Very good.
How about that? Then the Southern Comfort, which we got in Texas. You know,
I do like say what you will about the films of Walter Hill, but I'm a fan of Ry Cooter. So anytime you have him doing a soundtrack, it can't be a complete waste.
No, and that's it. I mean, I think the best, but also, like I said, the best actor was shot in the first 10 minutes. But then you have Mark Savoy and Dewey Balfa,
right,
you know, playing Parley Nous Armoires. And, you know, but just where it's cut, do you remember that? It's like at the end, so they're singing this, you know, cool song, and the guy's cutting up a pig, and so the guts are playing it out. And it's like, whoa, man, whoa. I mean, you know, it's like you couldn't even remember they played the song.
Well, in a case like that, when you see something like that, or in your case, when you hear, you know, when a film uses your work, you know, at least a royalty check is showing up.
Yeah.
So you're like, I don't like the way he sounds, but hey, the light bill is all right for this month.
Okay. And the two movies by Glenn Peet, you know, Belly's There, the Cajun, and The Scoundrel, and something about The Scoundrel's Wife.
Uh-huh.
People have their own thing about that. I mean, Belly's There, the Cajun, you know, a lot of things wrong with it. And Glenn asked me to do like the dance scene, and everybody around here says, oh, they're going to do the soundtrack anyway. So I was doing something. He called me and said, what you doing? I said, well, you know, regular. He said, do you want to come up to New York and do the soundtrack with Howard Shore? I said, yeah, in a second.
Oof.
So for me, that was a big deal for me. I love Howard Shore. And we actually got nominated. We got one something in Houston for best soundtrack for that album.
Oh, cool.
And I think it might have been nominated. But The Scoundrel's Wife, the thing about it is, this is a true story, Matthew. And they tried to do it, but anyway, before World War II, they had German submarines in the Gulf, you know, mm-hmm. because they went around the world. Well, what they captured this submarine, and they discovered there was like Evangeline made bread. They had all this stuff, and they would stop. The Germans would go there because they spoke French, and these Cajuns would sell them the stuff at the store. You know, so they had lived there. Basically, this is a true story. So that's the premise of that. But in that movie, The Scoundrel's Wife, there's a great shot. There's an old wooden building that they got Don Vappy, who plays old-time Creole music from New Orleans, and his band to perform. And that's one of the best musical pieces, you know, I've seen in the movie. It's really it feels like it was back there. So I think that's a winning little number for that particular movie.
Very good. I'm going through your own IMDb page, sir, and you got 9 titles, and I know there's more, but I just, you know, it's a website, and they hopefully will complete it somehow. Can you tell me about getting involved with Schultzy Gets the Blues?
Oh, love that movie.
Me too.
I mean, there was a Cormier is the one who was in there. That went to, he was a fiddle player in this place. But when I went, it played in Lafayette because they got the wrong movie.
Wait, what?
They had the wrong movie. The movie that they want didn't come in, so they had to just, you know, play this for a week. And I love the movie. I mean, when he hears Zydeco,
yep.
I mean, you know, they said, remember that line? Oh, you playing that monkey music? And it's like, it was so good. And mm-hmm. he came all the way, you know, he's been with Texas and he came to Louisiana. But that is a shot where they're playing with that band. They were in Holly Beach, Louisiana. Now we call this the Cajun Riviera. But let me just give you let me just paint a little picture.
Please.
My grandfather had a camp over there before 1957, because in 57 we had a hurricane called Katrina, which is, well, not Katrina, it was called Audrey, which is just as bad as Katrina. It wiped everything out. But mm-hmm. there's a picture of my mother on the beach in Holly Beach in a two-piece. It must have been 1941, 42. And in the background, there was a little picture, you know, like about 3 inches high and stuff like that. So I blew it up, you know, for the family, for the kids. And my son said, I said, what are those things? I said, oh, those are cows. They used to have cows on the beach. So use your imagination, right? And Ezra says, Dad, one of those cows is dead. You know, and so that was our Cajun Riviera.
Oh, my gosh.
And Schultzy Gets the Blues, they went there. And after that, that's when Katrina came. So it completely wiped out, you know, what that looked like, Holly Beach. But they went, you know, to Southwest Louisiana, and they went to the Zydeco Club. I thought that was just a very heartfelt movie. I thought it was odd, but really good.
It is. And for those folks who look for it, I don't know if it's on streaming. I have a DVD copy of it because I'm Mr. Physical Copy, you guys. But it's a German accordion player who is kind of a humdrum life in a small German town. And then through the power of radio and the radio frequencies, he hears Cajun music from Louisiana, and then crosses the pond and does a trek. It's a lovely, lovely travelogue and a nice Valentine to the music.
Oh, that's pretty good. He was Polish, and he was a minor.
Okay.
And then what he hears is Zydeco. He hears Cliff and Chenier.
Yeah, that's not bad.
And so he plays this music for his people over there, and they just don't say anything.
Yep.
You know, what are you doing with that? I love it.
Look at him like he's from Mars. It was the best. So, all right, Michael, what else is on your list? I have titles in front of me, but I want to see if we're matching.
I think that's about I went through everything. I mean, Heaven Prisoners, I really like that movie,
right,
as far as Dave Brover show, and then I told you about that. Then Evangeline, I think, we don't have to talk about it. Yeah, I'm done.
Oh, you're never done, Michael. Come on, you know that.
Well, I can't take everything right now.
That's all right. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org, talking Louisiana cinema with Michael Doucet. So I go through lists. I have a couple lists. And, of course, a lot of stuff is shot in New Orleans. But I know the state of Louisiana has become, in years, the last several years, just a hotbed for filmmaking. Good tax credits?
Yes, that's what exactly did. It depends on the governor. But, yeah, it was. I mean, they paid you to play here. And there was some really good movies done here. Sometimes they didn't have anything about New Orleans. I mean, some of them are kind of, I mean, they're gothic. Or they're not the kind of movies that I would go to, mm-hmm. you know. And, of course, the vampire movie.
Oh, Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah, I mean, that used New Orleans. That used a beautiful place up the river where the military base. And, of course, Oak Alley. I mean, yeah, it was way over the top. But, I mean, yeah, so they have movies like that, that spotlight New Orleans. I guess they have more than that. I think. They were filming something. I don't know if it was like Lincoln the Vampire or something. But some movie in New Orleans like that. And they do that. You never really... This kind of movie you never really see, but they have Louisiana in there.
Right. I know there was a Sylvester Stallone film, also with Walter Hill directing, called Bullet to the Head, that you know, you see some yeah, downtown New Orleans clubs. Werner Herzog made Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, with everyone's favorite corrupt cop, Nicolas Cage. So, you know, take the... And that was one of the first films, I believe, that actually filmed post-Katrina sections of the city in all its unpleasantness.
And there was a Tom Waits movie, too.
Remember Down by Law. Like, yeah, the Jim Jarmusch film.
Yeah, and that was an odd movie. But, I mean, that was really nice footage of the old houses with real houses.
Exactly. Okay, who is a better cinematic Cajun? Yul Brynner in The Magnificent Seven?
I love that you say that.
Or Jean-Claude Van Damme in Hard Target.
Oh, that's not even a contest. He only says that one time, as a Cajun. And it's so weird. And why would he do, what's the Cajun doing way out there? I mean, you know, I love that. I wish they would have promoted that a little bit more. But you're right. He says that. And whoever I was sitting with the first time, we saw it when it was young, it came out in the 60s. And I turned up to a friend of mine, did he say Cajun? We didn't think people knew the word. We never even called our music Cajun music. It was always French music.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't become Cajun until, you know, later on. It's an English, anglicized way of the word. Yeah, definitely Yul Brynner. He's our favorite. Yeah. And he's a king.
Well, and Hard Target, I mean, that's we have Wilford Brimley adding a little bit of character flair in that film. But yeah, it's one of John Woo's better American films. Right? No, I think somebody said it was Jean-Claude's best film, but John Woo's worst film. So, you know, it's somewhere in the middle there.
Well, he could have played. I mean, he speaks French, so I mean, that, you know, it could have worked. I just haven't seen it.
Well, there's add another one to the list. Also, several cocktails before watching Hard Target, I assure you. You mentioned Southern Gothic, and I know there was a streak of Southern Gothic, or at least Gothic looking films. And I know was Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte shot on location? Do you know?
Yes, it was. It was shot down a plantation. I think they're saying San Francisco plantation.
Okay.
It should be still there. Yes, it was. Yeah.
That was a film that my dear, dear friend Taffa DeVee has referred to. There is a subgenre called hagsploitation, where like this, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, where, you know, you have older actresses doing kind of, I shouldn't say lowbrow, but, you know, some more grindy, more melodramatic type material. So there's Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte. What did you think of Beasts of the Southern Wild?
It's funny. I was in Maine at that time, and a friend of mine saw this. He says, "Do y'all live like that?"
Oh, jeez.
No, I said, but you know, apart. I mean, it was overdone. But yes, there is poverty here, and there are people who. I mean, if you want to get lost, if you don't want anybody to find you, you come here. I mean, we have this, what you call the Chafalaya Basin, which is thousands of miles, and you know, so you can live there. You can live off the land, and nobody can find you. That was an extraordinary movie in a lot of ways. I mean, with that young girl, I can't remember her name, but she was great. But it was like overdone. It's like, you know, like Justin Wilson French, let's say that.
I would say if Charles Dickens lived down there, it would probably have been to that height, heightened.
Yeah, but it was a good movie. It was a heartfelt movie, and it was after the storm. And some of the things were good. I mean, just seeing the stuff around it. But yes. There are people who live like that, but not totally like that. I mean, they're on the edge.
Right.
And a lot of people who live like that are off the map, off the grill, because they're fishermen, or they do some other kind of hunting, or you know, things like that. It's, you know, realistic.
Or
a long way off.
Or neorealism, I guess, is what Fellini used to say.
Yeah, well, and it was like Fellini. It was like Fellini comes to Louisiana.
Well, and you know, and it, exactly as you said, it's a portion of a particular area, not the area itself. You know, it's just like just like you said, not everybody sounds like Dennis Quaid.
Thank goodness.
Who also did, I think, also shot in Louisiana was Everybody's All American.
Now, That was an interesting movie. You remember the guy who was running the race? You know who that was?
Who was that?
That was Aaron Neville.
Oh, yes. That's right.
That's right.
Who was also built like a football player.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I didn't mind that movie because from Baton Rouge. And Baton Rouge is like, it doesn't know what it wants to be. It's not New Orleans. It's not Cajun. You know, so it's confused. So he was perfect in that. You know? Representing Billy Cannon, who is confused. You know, a great guy, but he was perfect, man. Every night is holiday, is Halloween, right?
We have a friend. My wife's grad school roommate lives in New Orleans, and the last time we were down there, we were informed friends don't let friends go to Baton Rouge.
Oh, that's terrible.
But we actually did see a show that we had a friend of ours who was in a show on campus at LSU. So we survived. Yeah. We're okay.
You got to remember, Soundberg's father was a professor at LSU, and that's where his first movie, Sex, Lies, and Videotape, was shot.
Exactly. Very good. That's on this list as well. I'm a big fan of John Sayles, and I know you mentioned Passion Fish, and that's Jennings and Lake Arthur, Lafayette, right. Lake Charles, Elton. Do you remember some of the musicians that were involved in that project?
There was a little Queenie who just passed away. She was incredible. She was from, I think she was from, well, anyway, I met her in New Orleans at the Maple Leaf, and she was the white Irma Thomas.
Oh, wow.
And she was such a great soul singer, this little Queenie, and she plays like she's dying or something in that movie. I mean, I'm trying to remember. But she never really hit it big, but she should have. And there was a Zydeco band that played. And if I remember right, wasn't Toussaint like the bartender, Alan Toussaint?
I think so, because fun when you get to see musicians kind of pop up, not necessarily playing, you know, especially if they're not playing themselves or a variation of themselves.
There was good music. It was different music, if I remember. Because that music, where that was shot in Louisiana, as you well know, that's towards Texas. I mean, they're right next to the Calcasieu River, which is the Sabine River. You cross that, and, you know, you're in Texas, unfortunately. But he does definitely have an ear, and he picked people who weren't that popular, actually. Mm-hmm. It might have been Doopsie or somebody. I'm not really sure. But there was a party or wedding. They had a Zydeco band.
Right. Speaking of musicians who pop up and stuff, not Louisiana, but it's one of my favorites. So of course, if you remember movies in the 40s, the band, like a big band, would often get a credit because the film would, you know, come to a halt for 5 minutes. So, you know, Cab Calloway can have a number in the film.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorites is if you remember the film Anatomy of a Murder. The courtroom drama with Jimmy Stewart, and the music is done by Duke Ellington. And there's a great shot. It's set in northern Michigan, and there is a juke joint where there is a whole bunch of people dancing, and you hear this big band playing, and the camera, and it's also Otto Preminger directing, and the camera comes through the dancers, and then finally it lands at the piano where Jimmy Stewart and Duke Ellington are playing piano side by side. You know, and Duke had I think two or three lines, and then the show continued, and then the movie continued.
Was that with Lee Remick?
Yes, Ben Gazzara, George C. Scott.
That was a great movie. I mean, it's sad, but it was. Wow. Well, what's that movie? It was a Bing Crosby movie. They had Louis Armstrong.
Oh gosh!
At the beginning of that movie, they're in a car. That was good. That was a good promotion for him. You know, but I mean, and I don't know what else. I mean, look at that. I mean. I'm trying to think of, well, there's
High Society.
What was that? High Society.
That's
Thank
right.
Thank you. And there was a movie about our governor, Long. Not
Blaze.
Not Long, but Blaze.
Paul Newman.
It was not well done, but it was on Bourbon Street, and they had some musicians. And who can forget The Drowning Pool?
Yeah, that's right. Another one. Yep.
Paul Newman. That was shot in Lafayette. But the other good one, it was equally as bad as the first one, except it did have Steve McQueen. The Blob was shot in
the Africa. Remake. That's right. Kevin Dillon, Matt's brother, Shawnee Smith.
Exactly.
Man, exactly. I forgot about that.
But there's a reason why you forgot. don't worry.
Let's see. Okay, I have a bunch of time. I'll throw them out and I'll see how you respond here. I believe. Well, and I know they kind of shot in without a budget for a couple of days, but there is a Mardi Gras sequence in Easy Rider.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say Easy Rider, but most of the music wasn't Louisiana.
No.
I mean, they do. What's the best scenes in there? Was it the bordello and the graveyard? You know, but where they were shot. Wait a minute. Okay, where he was shot was on a levee that was going towards New Roads, which is where they shot that they went to this restaurant and the cops were there and these young girls were there. Mm-hmm. Well, I was one of those girls was a friend of mine back in those days, and it was like that was real. I mean, tension was real.
Oh yeah.
You know, so that yeah, we liked it, but just and the shots are good, like crossing the bridges and stuff like that. And but that scene on the levee, although it's a horrible scene, it's a death scene. That was a beautiful shot.
Are there shots in films that you don't need it to ever see again because it's been done so much? It's like Russian artists. It's like the Russian population saying to Western artists, you don't have to play Back in the USSR every time you come here.
Oh man, yeah. Well, the tourist thing is Café du Monde,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and usually it's in the quarter. Well, you're talking about the Drowning Pool. They're in the Mont Leon Theater Hotel on Royal Street, and they walk across. Joanne Woodward walks across, and that was a real antique place that she walked there. So that was kind of neat. Every now and then you have those kind of cool things. Oh, and Always a Slave, was it? Not Always a Slave, but it was a...
12 Years a Slave?
12 Years a Slave. They didn't mention that, but a lot of that was shot in New Orleans, it was called the St. John's Legacy, which is one of the oldest wooden houses in the quarter because it didn't burn during the fire. The house was built in the 1780s, and it's got brick buildings on the side of it, which is probably why it didn't burn. But it's all cypress. It's a raised cottage. It belongs to the New Orleans Historical Society, so you can't tour it. And where it was shot is in the back. Sometimes they won't let you in the back, but you know. If you want to see that, if you're a film buff, they usually do. So that's another place. No, it's like, you know, it's just don't say share, you know. how can we forget the cat people at the Audubon Zoo?
Oh, yes, and Paul Schrader.
Yeah, when it was still cages, and not because now it changed since then. Now they're all open, I mean, you know, for mm-hmm. animals, you know. So that was around Tulane and stuff like that. That was uptown. That was kind of nice.
You mentioned 12 Years a Slave. I, of course, by the way, friends, don't do this as a double feature. Django Unchained.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, what can you say? I mean, Tarantino, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's like, but the last one he did, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I loved it.
Yep.
I so didn't want to watch it because of the whole Manson thing, you know?
Right.
And the way they did, yes, what if it didn't happen, you know? What if Trump wasn't elected? It would have been, what a world.
That'll be the next week. No, but I remember saying to my daughter loves Tarantino. She's 19 now. And she had seen, and I think also the fact that he, you know, Tarantino has been doing some revisionist genre movies like Django Unchained, like Inglourious Basterds, and like this one.
Yeah.
And also the fact that the film is called Once Upon a Time. So
yeah.
there is that that aspect of it. Speaking of Brad Pitt, how about The Curious Case of Benjamin Button?
Well, you know, there were some interesting shots in New Orleans. They didn't overdo it. And they did very, you know, that was probably uptown that they did. That movie didn't leave anything to me. And I love Brad Pitt, don't get me wrong, but I didn't leave with anything.
Okay.
You know, so it didn't move me that much. There was a couple of good, you know, with the trees were kind of nice.
wasn't also The Apostle filmed in Louisiana?
Okay, yeah, that was filmed not too far from here where I live in Lafayette. Duvall helped to produce Glenn Peace, Belly Zare, and his wife at that time was Gail. Can't remember, just forget his name. She was in Belly Zare too, so he was nice to come back. And they had a little accordion player by the name of Hunter Hayes, in that movie who went to Nashville and like he was a, before the music business fell apart, he was a star. But I mean, Duvall really works, and he did. It was an old movie. You probably remember this. He did. It was a black and white movie. It was a Faulkner a story adaptation. He did probably Barn Burning, but he did this in the 70s. It wasn't like he was like playing a talking Boo Radley. But he always plays these really good Southerners, you know.
Yep.
I mean, he could play anything. He can really play anything.
Oh, Tomorrow.
That's exactly right.
From Tomorrow. 1972. The ladies and gentlemen, keyboard action here at Film Sociology. But yeah,
I don't remember the name of that one, but it was after, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Right. I also know that the remake of The Beguiled that Sofia Coppola directed was also shot.
I didn't see that, but I heard good things about it. Didn't see that one either.
And then I thought I read, and I just revisited this. I couldn't remember if it was here, but the original Sounder.
Yeah, that was in North Louisiana.
Okay.
That's what you start when you see it's around Natchez, Louisiana, Natchitoches, not Natchez, Mississippi, but Natchitoches. They have up there around the Cane River. All of a sudden, the ground turns red, the earth turns red, and it's beautiful. And that's where it was filmed up there. Now, I thought that was really good. I was going to watch that recently.
Well, with Cicely Tyson passing away, that was part of the reason why I revisited.
Yeah, but that thing with Diane Carroll was a real deal. I mean, the race and Preminger when it did Hurry Sundown. I mean, that was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a lot of good direct. I mean, Preminger, you don't push him around.
No, you don't.
You know,
he was a man who I think he spoke in all caps for those online. You would like that.
Yes.
I think we mentioned Eve's Bayou, and I really, really love Eve's Bayou.
Yeah, that was a very good movie.
I believe The Fugitive Kind, part of it was shot on location, I think.
I didn't see that. I mean, I don't, you know, that's your profession. I play music.
Well, I'm giving you titles, Michael. Let's see.
I've always loved movies. But Louisiana Story I hope you get to see it.
I will look for that. Yeah. I know Angel Heart, of course, was shot in New Orleans. There's a lot of New Orleans films.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you about that movie.
Okay.
I mean, it's gross and everything like that, but it's like the – and I think I looked it up. Where was it shot? In Voodoo Country. No. south of New Orleans. But the place where we really played – now, you know, for Cajun music was not – New Orleans never accepted us. Like, we were the Bohemians from the Bayou. And you know, when they started doing jazz and Heritage Festival, we began to
You're the Heritage.
We're the Heritage. We began to play. So this guy by the name of John Parsons, you know, started booking us at a place called the Maple Leaf, you know, bar. And so that's where we play once a month. And one month that we were there, we got it. We went to the place and said, man, this place is all cleaned up. What happened? He says, well, Angel Heart came in and used that place.
Yep.
For Angel Heart, and they did such a good time. You don't have to do the great people who work for the film, you know, and they can change anything.
Yeah,
so it was so nice. He said, "No, don't change it back to the way it was. Let's keep it like this." So if you ever go to the Maple Leaf, that's where some of that movie was filmed.
Okay, The Cincinnati Kid from 1965.
Now that I had it on my list to watch, and that's Steve McQueen.
Yep,
I really
Steve McQueen
to watch this. And that was a good time for them to go to New Orleans, but I have no idea. I never saw it.
And I think that will also capture what I remember, because it's supposed to be, you know, the underbelly of, you know, illegal poker games. They're going to go off the beaten path. So you're not going to get the usual shots.
Oh, that's good. I think it was about a card game. So
yeah,
where they have
to
do it.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I'm fine.
Well, I'm saying, what did you think of Clint Eastwood's Tightrope?
Didn't see it.
Okay, that's a New Orleans one, 1984. Or number one.
That was the name of the movie?
Charlton Heston is an aging quarterback for the New Orleans Saints.
Oh, I wouldn't go see Charlton Heston if she paid me.
All right. Got my answer here.
I'm pretty biased about this.
Do you see where we're going here, friends? All right. Let's see.
Anybody who plays God, give me a break.
For, Go ahead. No, that's fine. How about Brian De Palma's Obsession?
I like Brian De Palma, but I've never seen that one.
Cliff Robertson, Joan Villabujo, I believe it's John Lithgow, 1975, 76, I believe. All right, I'll give you one more title because otherwise, because a lot of these are New Orleans. Oh, no, actually two questions. Do you remember when they shot Live and Let Die down in your neck of the woods?
Oh, Roger Moore. Yes.
Yeah, the first Roger Moore Bond film.
Yeah, that was pretty. That was some nice scenes when he was in a powerboat.
Mm-hmm.
Nice things like that. And, oh, Back to Heaven's Prisoners.
Yeah.
The intro is one of the best intros in any movie I've ever seen. And you can still see that even if you go if you're traveling from Lafayette to, or from Margaret City to New Orleans, you cross over that opening. It's like a bayou that opens up almost to the Gulf. It's a great shot.
Cool. I know Paul Newman's the original 50s version of The Long Hot Summer, I believe, was shot on location, at least some of it.
Yes, yeah, some of it.
And Louis Malle's Pretty Baby.
Okay, that's another one. That was shot in this place that my brother plays. It's called the Collins Hotel on St. Charles Avenue in New Orleans. I like that show. I mean, you know, the piano player was good.
Mm-hmm.
Sarandon, my God.
Yeah.
Everybody else. It was kind of claustrophobic in its own way, and it could have been different. But it was there. I mean, you definitely got New Orleans. They were outside a whole lot in the courtyard.
Yeah,
so that's
yeah. There is some uncomfortable subject matter in this one. We call her Brooke Shields. We'll just graze over that. And I believe, and that's one of those where I would love the soundtrack to that. So obviously, Michael, my wife does the same thing. I'm assuming, are you always watching when there is music being performed on film?
I like it. I mean, I don't go for that. If they do, I'll definitely pay attention to it. Yeah, because have you ever watch a movie without soundtrack?
Well, yes.
It doesn't work. Well, it becomes a play, you know? So.
I think my best example of a great film with a not great musical moment, if you revisit Casablanca, the actor playing Sam doesn't know how to play a piano.
Yes. And that was an afterthought, right?
Yeah.
Just putting the song in there, that's what's for, and that makes the movie. Yeah, now we're talking great movie. It wasn't shot in Louisiana.
No, it was not, but there was
the one,
go ahead.
And the one with Broderick Crawford is All the King's Men, the same one that was redone. That was actually, when he goes to his house, you look out at his house and there's like mountains in the background. I said, this probably wasn't shot in Louisiana, but some of the things are shot there, but not that particular one. There are no mountains.
No, that's like the mountains of Illinois in The Fugitive, or
right.
The mountains in the Jackie Chan film Rumble in the Bronx. I believe, wasn't Mandingo shot in Louisiana?
You know, I think it was. Northern Louisiana. That was another plantation up there. I vaguely remember that. Because, you know, and Mississippi has a lot of plantations, but not as many as Louisiana, because somehow they saved them for some, you know, reason. But and it's a shame because there were a lot of them, obviously, the Mississippi River was their road. And a lot of them were, you know, burned down, et cetera. But the oil companies, that's where they ship from. So a lot of these great, like St. Helene, you know, they built all these refineries right around it. So it's kind of hard to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to see the thing. But there's still some.
Oh, Miller's Crossing.
I didn't know that was shot in Louisiana.
I think it was. Otherwise, this wouldn't have been on my list in front of me. So anyway, there's that. Okay. Killing Him Softly, Let's Do It Again, DOA, Elvis did Frankie and Johnny, but take that for what it's worth. I think that was shot in the studio. But and Queen and Slim, if you get a chance, that's one that came out last year of two kids on the run with Daniel Kyuga from Get Out. And there's a juke joint scene, if I remember right, involving little Freddie King.
Oh, wow. Wow,
so
that's worth it.
Be on the lookout for that. And I know they filmed Unhinged in New Orleans. And if you want, you know, Russell Crowe in a giant pickup truck terrorizing people,
Not my genre.
Not your genre. That's okay. You know what? They got the tax credits. It's okay. And and then finally, Nicolas Cage, and I have to mention Nicolas Cage and Zandali with Judge Reinhold. So there you go. Lots of titles.
Lots of titles. A lot of great films. A lot of not great films.
But you know, keeps you guessing.
It keeps you guessing. It's there, and like you know, it's a shame that it didn't work with a James Lee Burke movie because he's a great writer. I mean, he used to teach at the university here, USL, and he was rejected 99 times before you know they picked him up to actually do you know. Hello? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Yeah. My earphones are right now.
Oh, okay.
And I really like Heaven's Gate. And I was really disappointed in you know Confederate Mist for a lot of reasons, but Electric is pretty good. And they were supposed to do another one, but they never did.
Yep.
Anyway, la di da. Well, that was fun.
Well, friends, I'm sorry. Michael, tell people where they can find your music and they can find more about you, because right now we're still waiting on gigs, I guess, for 21 and 22.
22, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if you want to find out where, you know, we do have a website, you know, Beau Soleil Music, and we're booked by the Roots Agency, and we have like 30 albums out. We try to do every label they have. You know? I mean, we go from Blue Note to Pate Martini to, you know, Swallow to Smithsonian, about 30 records, and, you know, we used to tour all over. I mean, that's where I met you, at that great bar.
At the Jazz Kitchen, yeah.
At the Jazz Kitchen. And, you know, it's like, we were lucky. It was fun. And it was before, you know, and it was funny. Paul Prudhomme was a good friend of mine. And even before he became famous, he had a little restaurant. And this is a story. I mean,
I can say.
So he used to call me up, you know, to go do little gigs. Like, you know, he had a party or something like that. So anyway, so one time he asked his assistant, he just called Michael Doucet and tell him, you know, and we got a gig for him. So I was at the house and I got a call from Paul. Hey, Paul, how you doing? He says, I want you to hear something. And he put his phone, it was like the worst music I could ever. I said, what is that? You know, somebody learning how to play? He said, oh, my assistant called. And, you know, they have like Michael Doucet, it's like John Smith. So he asked the first Michael Doucet, are you a musician? Oh, yeah. He said, well, come play. He knew one song. So that's what happened. But we've been very fortunate, you know, from what you know we've done. It's like you know, we played for three inaugurations, and you know, been around the world, and we played every state in the union. That's what I really wanted.
All right.
In this music, and so it, you know, I look back. I'll never rest on any kind of laurels. I can't continue to do what's going on now. But we had a good run, and we couldn't do it now. You know, Matthew, that's the sad thing. It would be impossible to do it virtually. No. You know?
What was the last state you got and when?
Oh, the last real gig that we got?
No, the last state that you covered of the 50 states. Do you remember?
That's pretty. Oh, yeah, I remember. That's pretty funny because it was like North Dakota. All right, and so we go to Garrison. We play at Prairie Home Companion a lot, and so we told him that. So then he said, "Oh well, we'll just move not for us, but just a whim." And so we got this gig to bring Prairie Home Companion to North Dakota. In that year, we played North Dakota three times,
making up for lost time, I guess.
Wasn't a problem to play Hawaii or Alaska. One of the last states we played, not the last state, was, believe it or not, was Mississippi.
And really?
Right next door, because it wasn't a place to play it. And wow. They, in Michigan, they were going to call us, you know, the state band. We played there so often. And in Wisconsin, it's unbelievable to play Wisconsin. A lot of places in California and East, every place else. But it's like there's some places that are hard to get to. Yeah, we played every place in the Union three times. How about that?
Outstanding. Very good. Yeah. Friends, you can go to beausoleilmusic.com, and that's BEAUSOLEIL. And you should get some of this in your collection. You'll be all the better for it.
Check. And we did soundtracks. I mean, we've got a soundtrack to Big Easy and, of course, Billy Zare. And they used our music and other music. Oh, The Gun and Betty Lou's Handbag.
Yes, Penelope Ann Miller.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And what was something? Well, it was called "Don't Tell Her It's Me," and it's also known as the Boyfriend School with Steve Guttenberg, Jamie Gertz, and Shelley Long.
That's hysterical. A French version of a Sting song. Like no. Every breath you take. That was fun.
Oh, really? Okay. Oh, yeah. That's what it says. So very cool.
Well, Matthew, this has been fun, man. Thank you, man. I miss you, man, and thanks for calling. I'm glad you're doing good. I hope we tour again.
Yes, or I get down there or something. But no, Michael, I'm glad you're hanging in there, and you know this was a lot of fun, and yeah, we'll see each other soon. I hope.
All right, best to you. Stay safe.
That's Michael Doucet. Fun stuff. Go to BeauSoleilMusic.com for all the info, and you should really have some of his music in your collection. All right, we're going to take a short break and then grab a pencil. I'll talk about what movies I watched this week, and then we'll talk about movies you watched this week. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Here's a little bit from Michael's solo album. From the album La Chaise Prise, sorry, Michael. That's Michael Doucet, along with the Turtle Island Quartet, and a tune called Cajun Gypsy. Go to BeauSoleilMusic.com and get this album, as well as all the Beausoleil music, because you really should. Your music collection will be that much cooler, as it should be. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Obviously, I'm Matthew Soucy, and it is time to grab a pencil, because I'm going to be telling you what I watched this week, and then we'll go on to Facebook and find out what you watched this week. So there's a couple titles that are opening in theaters this weekend, and we'll have to check when the streaming is released, but the frontier drama The World to Come, and this stars Vanessa Kirby and Catherine Waterston, set in 1865. It's two neighbor wives who take some time and wind up having an affair together. The husbands in this one are played by Christopher Abbott and Casey Affleck. So we've gone from Portrait of a Lady on Fire to Ammonite to now The World to Come. And you go to this for the two female performances. Really good work from Vanessa Kirby and Catherine Waterston. There's a recurring bit involving the Catherine Waterston character, Abigail, who does a very cold diary voiceovers throughout the film. And it takes a while before the film really kicks into gear. You could probably have trimmed about 20 minutes off of it. Now, I don't expect a film set in 1865 in the frontier to move like a Michael Bay film or a Baz Luhrmann picture, but it does take some time to get into it. Once we get to about the 50-minute mark, and not just because sparks fly, but sparks do fly, does it really start to become a little more easier to watch, a little more enjoyable to watch, I should say. The two husbands are vastly different. Casey Affleck has the introverted performance where the Christopher Abbott husband, who is not happy with his wife not doing her wifely duties, no one really find out, or does he find out exactly what is going on. And Affleck's character is kind of the opposite, where he's internal, but maybe has an idea, or maybe he doesn't. But a really tense dinner moment involving the four of them, and you kind of know how it's going to end if you've watched if you watched a frontier lesbian melodrama like this one. But there is a nice payoff with the diary pages. Again, it's a flawed effort, but you go for the female performances, and if you can get past the first 20 minutes or so, you'll like this. But it's worth checking out, The World to Come. The other new film that stars and is directed by, as well as executive produced by, Robin Wright, called Land. Wright plays a woman who has lost her family, and she's going to move up into a cabin deep into the mountains to live on her own. The question then becomes, is this the comedic living in the woods film or the navel-gazing living in the woods film? And it kind of falls on the latter, but we get flashbacks early on in the film. It's kind of a puzzle as to why she's there, wanting to disregard her family, throwing away her cell phone, and moving up into the mountains by herself, not wanting a vehicle. And it seems like she's atoning for some past problems. And as the film goes on, especially there's some nice physical work from Robin Wright. But when Damien Bashir comes into the picture as Bashir and his character's wife wind up saving her from freezing to death during a blizzard, the two have a nice rapport together. And what I'm happy about with the film is there's a bond between the Robin Wright character and the Damien Bashir character. That, well, if you saw The Midnight Sky, I was hoping it wasn't going to go down that path, and for unfortunately for me, the film doesn't. It does go through a lot of time, and there is that survival tale aspect from Robin Wright physically, but there's also an emotional survival story in her case. So, again, first time director. And it's you get a lot of lovely drone shots of the mountains and some lovely country footage. And, yeah, obviously as time goes on, she gets better at fishing, hunting, and living out in the wild. And some nice work with the dog as well. So if you're a fan of Robin Wright, you should check this out. It's not bad. So you got two not bad films out there, not great but not bad, in Land as well as The World to Come. Still chipping away at the Essential Fellini box set from Criterion. Hit one of the main ones, Knights of Cabiria. If you're a fan of the musical Sweet Charity and you've not seen Knights, you really need to do that. The story of a working girl failing at finding love, scorned by her coworkers, and just going from one strikeout after the next. Everything from a movie star to a religious zealot, and then the last guy. Will he or will he not be the one? And really lovely work from Giulietta Messina, who has done a number of Bergman films, of course, prior to this, most notably La Strada. Heartbreaking ending, but with a final moment with her walking that just kind of puts a lump in your throat and a pound in your heart. Really good neo-realistic look. And then funny because Messina in real life is a beautiful woman, but as she looks at times like one of the in this case with neorealism, you have regular people playing roles and often sometimes bouncing off against real actors, and she looks like one of the locals, but is not definitely not the case in this. So good heartbreaking tale, and go see this for a tough, funny, vulnerable performance from Giulietta Messina, Knights of Cabiria, from Criterion as part of the Essential Fellini Collection. And then stuff that's been on my pile, I just haven't gotten around to it. I finally got to watch, I'd never seen the extended cut of Barry Levinson's film Bugsy, the James Toback screenplay with Warren Beatty as Bugsy Siegel, Annette Bening, who was already on a hot streak between The Grifters, Postcards from the Edge, and then this. And really nice work from the two of them. I forget with Warren Beatty, it's a really good Warren Beatty performance when he is as handsome as he is playing somebody who is flawed and a bit of a screw up. The last Beatty film I remember watching with Mrs. Soucy was Shampoo, and that's another fine example of that type of character. Here he's obviously Bugsy Siegel, the gangster who wants to get involved in Hollywood, even takes a screen test, and then has bigger aspirations by creating the paradise known as Las Vegas. And So you have that aspect of it. It is as glossy of a picture from 1991, looking like a 40. It's a 40s gangster film with a much bigger budget, and really nice music from Ennio Morricone and great costumes. It tries to have a feel of a Warner Brothers film, one of the Warner Brothers gangster films of the 1940s, but at a much higher level. So, and coming off the bench, you have Harvey Keitel, Ben Kingsley, both of which got supporting actor nominations, Elliot Gould, Joe Mantegna, B.B. Newirth. So it was fun to watch this again, and I forgot how funny this film could be at times. There's some nice physical comedy from Beatty's character, especially when he's going back and forth between a business meeting with his business associates and arranging his daughter's birthday party, especially wearing a chef's hat, going back and forth from meeting to kitchen. So, again, I'd never seen the extended cut, and I'm glad I did. So, Bugsy is out there. I have a DVD of it. You'll have to look for it on your own. Also revisiting The End of the Tour, one of the best films about journalism, with Jason Segel and Jesse Eisenberg, and story of David Foster Wallace and a reporter from Rolling Stone magazine. Really nice verbal and mental tennis and chess between Jason and Jesse. So glad that I got to revisit that. And I mentioned when Cloris Leachman passed away, one of the films I watched was the Roger Corman film that she starred in called Crazy Mama. And I brought up the other Mama films involving Roger Corman, Big Bad Mama with Angie Dickinson and its sequel, and 1970s Bloody Mama with Shelley Winters as Ma Barker. This was actually produced and directed by Roger Corman, an AIP picture, and man, it's a thing. So Ma Barker with her four sons, including a young Robert De Niro, grown sons, some of which she bathes personally and sleeps with personally. We go down that path a little bit. We go down a weird prison scene involving one of her sons and another criminal played by Bruce Dern, who gets into the fray. I've seen Shelley Winters chew scenery less in other films around this time, most notably like something like Cleopatra Jones. But she was doing this anti-Rue movies and this. This was a couple years and, of course, getting another big boost with The Poseidon Adventure. But yeah, it's an AIP film if you like period gangster films with a little bit of incest weirdness and drug-addicted Robert De Niro. Yeah. That's out there from Bloody Mama. I don't know if I'm going to watch Big Bad Mama because I don't believe I own it as much as I enjoy looking at Angie Dickinson. So that's what I've watched this week. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Okay, friends, grab a pencil. Let's see what you've been watching. And we go to Facebook. Nothing on Twitter. No emails this week. That's okay. We start with Pamela, who writes, Palmer, The Dig, The Little Things, and Places in the Heart. Ingrid writes, none. I think I didn't read this from last week. No. Raymond writes, The Dig. Rosanna writes, My Octopus Teacher. Brent writes, Let Him Go. Andy writes, Rocket Man. Kathleen writes, The Dig, Phantom of the Opera, Angel Has Fallen, While You Were Sleeping, and Playing for Keeps. Joshua writes, The Midnight Sky, and Impeachment 2, Electric Boogaloo. Thank you, Joshua. I see what you did there. Britt writes, Shrek the Musical, Onward, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, The Live-Action Lady and the Tramp, Inside Man, David Fincher's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Nicholas Nickleby, Coming to America, Speed, Batman Begins, Murder by Decree, hey, Patty, Whitney, The Ridley Scott Robin Hood, the one with Russell Crowe and Cate Blanchett, and The Dark Knight. Randy writes, Naked Gun, still hilarious. We plan on watching 3 Days at the Condor because my wife has never seen it. Christian writes, The Sixth Sense, as well as my son and I watched this after hearing it referenced in Hidden Brain. We agree that it was a miracle that we had never been subjected to spoilers, even though we still hadn't seen it. A friend of mine has the DVD and lent it to us. That's how it happens sometimes, Christian. Way to go. Mary writes, Groundhog Day. Nancy writes, Mank, the original, The Producers, Blazing Saddles, and Lethal Weapon. It's a Christmas movie. Nancy, nobody cares if it's a Christmas movie or not. I don't. Gretchen writes, a fall from grace. Still finally watching Gilmore Girls and just started The Outlander. Okay. Tina writes, this past week we watched The Trial of the Chicago 7 and How to Train Your Dragon 1, 2, and 3. John writes, defending your life. David Lindquist. Hey, David. David writes The Hustler from 1961. And Frank chimes in, have you ever seen Requiem for a Heavyweight? A great one to watch after The Hustler. Which, yeah, you're going to curl up in a fetal position if you're watching that double feature. And then Kim chimed in also for a triple feature, add The Great White Hope. Whew. Michelle writes, Heart's War, How to Train Your Dragon 3, and binge-watching The Man in the High Castle. John writes, finally got around The Fisherman's Friends. Michael writes, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Dan writes, I Married a Witch. Kelly writes, Heartburn and The Heat. Lou writes, One Touch of Venus, The Keep, and Kismet. Channing writes, Lamberto Bava's Demons and Demons 2. Sean writes, A Promising Young Woman. Kathy writes, Mank. Jay writes, Bloodshot, The Little Things, and The Marksman were the big ones this week. Beverly writes, The Matrix. Ross writes, Closer, Ant-Man, and Sound of Metal. Judy writes, Pawn Sacrifice. Jose writes, Lucky, and the compilation of The Attack on Congress. Yep. Abby writes, South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. Glenn writes, The 40-Year Version. Or 40-year-old version. Chris writes, oh, Chris Lloyd, the Mediterranean, sorry. Judas and the Black Messiah, Land, The World to Come, Avengers Affinity War, and Thor Ragnarok. Craig writes, Good Time and In the Shadow of the Moon. Paul writes, The Dig. Carrie writes, The Movie Snowpiercer and Tenet, The Iceman, and We've Always Lived in the Castle. Kay writes, The Report and a Bollywood movie called Chopsticks. Thank you, Kay. Michelle writes, Master and Commander. Abby writes, One Night in Miami, as well as A Century of Black Cinema. Brock writes, Gretel and Hansel and Possessor. Scott writes, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. I think it should be required to watch this once a year. Nice. Don writes, Bliss. It's a Disaster, Please Stand By, and I See You. Helen writes, The Trial of the Chicago 7. Joe Shearer writes, Malcolm and Marie, Up in the Air, Godzilla, The World to Come, The Great Outdoors, Halloween 2 from 2009, not the original, Chopping Mall, Palmer, Creepshow 2, The Fog, the original from 1980, and One Fine Day. Eden writes, The Intouchables was amazing. So was One Night in Miami. Tiffany writes, Little Women from 2019, Emma from last year, and The Royal Tenenbaums. Christian writes, 12th Man, Norwegian film with subtitles about World War II, based on a true story. Rachel writes, The Yin Yang Master, Dream of Eternity. It was excellent. Doug writes, The Blue Bird, South Pacific, Porgy and Bess, West Side Story, This is Spinal Tap, and Rent. Andy writes, Sarah and I watch Flight of the Navigator. I honestly really could use more movies about alien life form that come to Earth and turns into complete dumb bleep after interacting with human intelligence. Thank you, Andy. Mike writes, The Bourne series. Tracy Foreigner writes, Ford versus Ferrari, again, and Ratatouille with the boys. Very good, Tracy. Got to get you back on the show. Dennis writes, anybody have a hard time watching some of your old favorites because of the political bent or the hucksterism of actors? Hard time watching Quigley Down Under these days. It happens, Dennis. It's all right. Andrew writes, The Imitation Game. Janet writes, The Legend of Black Charlie, the Fred Williamson film, Janet? All right. I'm sorry, film sociology guest Fred Williamson. And that's not the original title. I can tell you that, but I'm not telling you what it is. Spider-Man 3, Just Mercy, Letters to Juliet, Patriot Games, The Conversation, and Muppets in Space and Muppet Treasure Island. Wow, I was not expecting The Legend of Black Charlie. Cool. Michael writes, What Happened, Miss Simone? A tough documentary about Nina Simone, and Ace in the Hole, a gritty and searing movie by Billy Wilder. Agreed, Michael. Ace in the Hole one of the best films about journalism or what not to do with journalism. Robert Mikey writes, courtesy of the Criterion Channel, Diana and I have been watching all the glorious films Joseph von Sternberg directed with Marlene Dietrich between 1930 and 1935. The emphasis is on painting with light. Thank you, Robert. Daniel writes, that's my boy, Lewis and Martin. All the President's Men, things you can tell just by looking at her, Madame Hyde, and Young Frankenstein. Marshall writes, The Banker on Apple TV. It was excellent. Joan writes, The Founder. A friend was over who hadn't seen it. Michael Keaton is so good. And that's a really good film. Not enough people have seen that, Joan. Yes, dear. Jennifer writes, The Graduate, Giant, and City Slickers. Jim Malin writes, The Seven Samurai, and he makes the logo on my Facebook page. Thank you, Jim. Kathy writes, Before the Wrath. Andrew writes, Palmer, Banana Split, and Fist Fight. Chris writes, I can't stop watching Master and Commander. I'm glad a couple people have revisited Master and Commander. I might need to do that. There was an article, I think, in January talking about how this should have been the franchise that made five films instead of Pirates of the Caribbean. So, cool, Chris. Good to hear from you. James writes, Blaith and Something Weird. Megan writes, Sound of Music and Cinderella. No judgment, please. And, of course, if you ask for no judgment, you automatically get judgment. But those two are fine. And, by the way, Cinderella live action or animation? Got to tell me that, please. Joe writes, The Dig and North and South. Moveen writes, Mishima, directed by Paul Schrader, based on prolific Japanese writer, actor, political activist, and his final performance, music by Philip Glass. And Moveen, yeah, I actually have this on Blu-ray, and if I remember right, I watched it earlier this year. So a pandemic will do that for you. Kristen writes, spending time with my mom. So Pillow Talk, Crazy Rich Asians, Viva Las Vegas, and Grease. Before that, we really liked The Kid Detective. Nice stuff there. Jeff. Hey, Jeff Parise of Mad Men and Ball State Theater fame. In and of itself, and The Love Witch, and In and of Itself on Hulu. Ah, Jeff, good to hear from you, man. Julia Ricci writes, Moonrise on TCM. Roger writes, One Night in Miami. Tony writes, In and of Itself. Nick writes, Adam Egoyan's Ararat. Right? William writes, I, Frankenstein, Killers Anonymous, Malone. Wow, 80s Burt Reynolds, 1987 Burt Reynolds. I saw that in the theater. Saints and Sinners, The Void, Saints and Sinners, The Tracker, and Vault. Devin writes, Framing Britney Spears. Kara writes, The Dig. Tina writes, Wizard of Oz and Beyond Borders. Terry writes, The Silent Partner, Voyager, Harold and Maude, and 20 Million Miles to Earth. Andrea writes, The Devil Wears Prada. Pamela writes, The THR Roundtable with Actresses. Whoops. Jean writes, Boss Level. Carrie writes, While You Were Sleeping. Deb writes, Mank, along with her reaction, Wow. Austin, hey, Austin Glidden. Akira, Grave of the Fireflies, Malcolm and Marie, Framing Britney Spears, In and of Itself, and The Father. And check out his Medium Cool podcast, if you would. Cheryl writes, rewatch Taxi Driver since there was a couple podcasts about it, and I wanted to listen to. Man, it is a masterpiece. It's a great film. Don't think I can get my family to watch it, but I think it's a great film. My theory, of course, it's the 70s Don Quixote. If it's White Rage. Rosalie writes, The Dig. Judith writes, White Tiger was an amazing glimpse inside the caste system in the caste system in India. Hard to watch, but very interesting. Bill writes, One Night in Miami. Jan writes, Digging Deep into the Library, Galaxy Quest. What a gem. And finally, Barbara Hobbs. I got to get you on the show as well, Barbara. It's Complicated, John Wick, and Catch Me If You Can. That's a title, not a challenge. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hope you've got some ideas as far as new films to watch, whether they are new or new to you, as well as some old favorites. Now, I got a couple of marks here. Oh, over at IU Cinema, running through Wednesday, February 17th, We're still in the virtual screening room. 10 years, 10 films, 10 perspectives series. Congratulations to IU Cinema and their 10th anniversary. But we have a free virtual cinema engagement of The Hitchhiker from 1953. Running through February 24th, as well as a virtual screening experience, the 1976 documentary Grey Gardens. Wednesday, February 17th through Wednesday, March 3rd, will be Buster Keaton's The General. Thursday, February 18th, a special virtual event at 7 o'clock, President's Choice, Fellini's 8.5, which is getting close to where I'm going to be. La Dolce Vita, then 8.5 in the Criterion box set. Tuesday, February 23rd through Friday, February 26th will be the virtual screening of the film Tunnel. And then Tuesday the 23rd, A Hard Day at 7 p.m. So, yeah, check those out over at IU Cinema. And we need to raise a glass to two people we like, two dead people we like, because we never have dead people. We don't have time for dead people we don't like. I didn't get a chance to do this last week and probably the week before, but producer Alberto Grimaldi passed away on January 23rd at the age of 95. 50 credits as a producer and executive producer in going back to 1962 with films like Shades of Zero, Texas Ranger, Legacy for the Incas, but hit big with For a Few Dollars More, Dollars for a Fast Gun, Requiem for a Secret Agent, The Big Gun Down, and 1966's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Would later do more Italian, a lot of Italian films, some of which would, and then he'd do some stuff here in Hollywood. I mentioned Appointment in Beirut, The Mercenary, was a producer on Fellini's Satyricon, all three Sabata films, the underappreciated Marlon Brando film Burn, The Canterbury Tales, Man of the East, Last Tango in Paris, Man of La Mancha, Avanti, Salo or 120 Days of Sodom, Burnt Offerings, 1900, Fellini's Casanova, and Fellini's Ginger and Fred, and his second to last film was his one Best Picture nomination, Martin Scorsese's Gangs of New York. So here's to you, Alberto. As well as a screenwriter, pardon my French, Michael, I could use you, Jean-Claude Carrière, who passed away on February 8th at the age of 89. Hot list title readings here at Film Sociology. Won an Academy Award for Best Live Action Short Subject for Happy Anniversary in 1962, and then wound up doing screenplays, a lot of them obviously in France and some here in the United States, including Viva Maria, did the adaptation and dialogue for Belle du Jour. That was for Catherine Deneuve. The Swimming Pool received a nomination for The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeois back in 1972. Another nomination for That Obscure Object of Desire. The French, that's 1977. Did a French adaptation for a TV film version of Harold and Maude. 1979 was the writer on The Tin Drum. Did the screenplay for 1982's The Return of Martin Guerre. That's one I got to see in the art house cinema in the Detroit suburbs with my dad. Y'all know it as Summersby. going to his third nomination for the screenplay for The Unbearable Lightness of Being, Valmont, you know, the one that's not Dangerous Liaisons, the 1990 adaptation of Cyrano de Bergerac with Gerard Depardieu, and then Birth back in 2004, and Goya's Ghost, among others. So here's to you, Jean-Claude. Salute. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Sometimes you just have to dig a little bit. So hope you find some movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you're being good to one another. Hope you're staying warm out there. And we'll do this again next week. So take care, everybody. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
Parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
No. We'll do it live!